So, Venerable Ajahn Anand gives his welcome to all the monks and novices, to all the monastics, and blessings to all the laity who have come together today to learn about Dhamma. So, this Dhamma, we learn about an important what are blessings to our life. And there are the 38 highest blessings of one's life. And this these blessings were taught by the Buddha, and they came about that all the divine beings, the devas and the Brahmas, they couldn't know of what were the highest blessings of one's life. And so the Buddha gave this teaching because we can see that in the lives of people, we can do many things, and there can be some people who take or search for blessings in the wrong way, maybe to try to get rich. And there may be a tradition that they think this Upasita hall is very sacred. And so they think if they can get the materials from underneath to keep, and that can help them to become rich and wealthy and have good luck, good fortune. But this isn't the correct understanding because the Upasita hall is a place where people come to practice, to chant, to meditate, and to build in goodness. And so that's what is good about these sacred buildings is the coming together of people and practicing meditation, developing sila precepts, and practicing in that place. And so that is the blessing that one gains from that. And so to think that there's other sort of materials that can give one blessings isn't the correct understanding. And so the Buddha taught of having a fundamental or foundation in wisdom. And whatever one does in the world, one needs to have wisdom. What one learns, what one studies, gains an education in, one needs to have wisdom. One even needs to have wisdom in going about the world, like purchasing what is clothes, buying food to eat. They need to choose what are the good ingredients that they're not expired. If people are purchasing medicines, they have to see that they're not expired. And so all these things require a certain level of wisdom to go about appropriately in the world. And also, what is very important is who people associate with in the world. For those who have only a little wisdom, then they should associate with people who have a lot of wisdom. But if one associates with someone who is a fool of little wisdom, then one may lead one's life in a bad way or go a wrong way. Just like King Ajatasattru and Devadatta following Devadatta. And so he ended up losing the right way, and his life declined and went badly. We heard of Venerable Sariputta before he ordained, was a Brahmin, and he saw Venerable Asajj the elder, who was walking on alms round, and he gained faith in the a very beautiful conduct of Venerable Asajj. And then Venerable Sariputta, then he could see that Venerable Asajj was one who had great mindfulness and wisdom. And also Venerable Asajj himself had a very high level of Dhamma that he could teach Venerable Sariputta. And so we can see that we need to associate with wise people. And so there's the outer wise person, but there's also the inner wise person that we need to associate with. Just the same as there's the outer fools, but there's also the inner fools. And these are the qualities of the defilements, the greed, anger, delusion. And so one really needs to be careful with these defilements. And some people say that these defilements come up very strongly and they can't do anything about it. The mind's not strong enough to go against it. And these defilements end up making us all hot and bothered, all turbulent, all over the place. And so this is why we do need to train our minds so that we can build the strength of our minds to go against these defilements. We need to make our samadhi, our concentration, to be more firmly established so that we're able to gain wisdom. And so the sutta, the Mangala Sutta, which teaches of the 38 highest blessings of one's life, it begins with the not associating with fools and the associating with wise people. That's the second part of this session, the question and answers.
Respected Longpo, during meditation and doing vipassana investigation, how should we proceed? How do we know that it's not our mental proliferation, thinking and analyzing, and not true vipassana? Is the difference on passive and active investigation? For example, vipassana is passive and just looking, and mental proliferation is active and looking for opportunity to investigate. How should we do proper vipassana meditation when we have strength from samadhi?
So if we want to separate out these terms, then we can separate out in terms of samadhi, concentration, and vipassana, insight. So we can see them as being separate things. But in Dhamma practice, in reality, it's not really separated. We develop samadhi, which is this firmly concentrated or one-pointed mind. And to do this, we use a samatha meditation object, a tranquility object. And so to do this, these are methods to bring the mind to peace. And there's two methods that we can use. The first one is used like a barikama, like a mental repetition. For example, like Butto, Dhammo, Sangho, or developing metta, we can use may I be well, may I be well, may I be well. Or contemplating the bones, we can use atikang patikulang, atikang patikulang. The bones are loathsome, the bones are loathsome. Or for monks, they may use the mental repetition. Kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, tacho, danta, naka, loma, kesa, back and forth like this. And we practice and repeat this so that the mind can overcome the proliferations, the mind being unsteady, and make it to stay with this meditation object. And so this is something we have to develop and to practice a lot. And so there may be thoughts coming up, but then we use this mental repetition a lot quickly. We can butto, 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 and not let the thoughts enter at all. And practicing like this, and ultimately the thoughts can cease, and the mind becomes peaceful. And that's mental agitation or unpeacefulness is gone. The second method is we can use contemplation or thinking. We can contemplate that we this body is dead already, or this body is of the nature to decay. It's of the nature to change. It's made up of these four elements, earth, air, fire, water elements. They change their state and then they decay and then go back to their natural elements. Then there's no me, no mine in this body. It can't be found there. And it's like this, the mind can get peaceful. We can contemplate the body, that it's loathsome, that it's full of disgusting things, full of this flesh and blood and all sorts of things inside. And we can contemplate this back and forth many, many times, many rounds, that to make the mind peaceful. And contemplate as if the body is already dead. When the body dies, then it'll start to bloat up, change color. The smell will be very putrid. It's a breeding ground for all sorts of things inside. And so contemplating like this in these sorts of ways is what we call samatha, tranquility meditation. One can use the contemplation of death, contemplating life is uncertain, death is certain, I must die for sure, death will come to me for sure, or thinking that I have to die, or picturing it even. And these can bring the mind to peace and to reduce and to stop the thoughts. And then we can see that it isn't a self there. And so this is still using our perception, the sanya, and it is still samatha, tranquility meditation. Vipassana is this insight or clear seeing, clear knowing, and we can, we may in the beginning be using our thoughts and reflections in order to contemplate, in order to bring up clear knowing. And it is in this way then still using the mental proliferation there. And there may be in the beginning, if the mind is still agitated and not yet concentrated or peaceful, then it may be just using these mental proliferations to try to bring up insight. And if it's like that, then it's like the defilements are covering over the mind. But we have to use this thinking, the contemplation, in order to bring the mind to peace first. When the mind is well established in peace, then we can even just, a hair may fall down from our head and we see that, and the knowing just arises then and there that it isn't us, it's not mine. And this is the wisdom and insight arising. Or we may mentally picture it, that hairs falling down, and we can see that, oh, it's not us, it's not ours. And this is if the mind has that foundation of peace there, then wisdom can arise like that. But if the mind isn't peaceful yet, then that insight maybe won't arise. And so we need to have a foundation of firm samadhi, concentration. And then when we contemplate, we may gain then clear seeing, which we call then vipassana. Like one may see a dead person and one's mind is already peaceful, then a thought or the mind starts to proliferate, and one then has the thinking come up that, oh, this is a dead person, This is a policeman, because we start seeing them putting the uniform back on this body, the corpse, and these labels and conventions, they start coming up in our mind. But because the mind is peaceful, we have this knowing come up that it's not like that. They're simply just conventions. And then this knowing comes up, and this is when vipassana arises. This is clear knowing, and it allows us to let go of, abandon our attachments that we have. And so even if we may gain this insight momentarily, we can abandon attachments momentarily, it is still seeing it in terms of it simply being conventions, labels. So this is the wisdom coming from the mind that is peaceful. And so we may label it like vipassana and samadhi or samatha, and we can use our thinking first. And so when we have sense experiences, maybe there's these sense objects, the things we receive of our sensory world, it comes in into the mind, and then we have mindfulness and wisdom there in order to be with this experience or receive this experience. Then we can contemplate this object, this sense object coming in, that it is impermanent. It shouldn't be attached to. And this is like we're developing and having mindfulness there. And this is correct practice of how we should establish our minds. If we have very strong mindfulness and samadhi there in the mind, then when the mind starts to move from that state of calm, then we can know it as being not self. But if our foundation of peace is weak, then the mind will instead move with the contact from the senses or sense object. And so it means that we need to train the mind to be well established in peacefulness. And so Venerable Ajahn Chah may give the example of the cup that's already broken. And so we can contemplate that this as being normal. This is the way it is. And before we may respond in terms of having likes and dislikes, desires or aversion, but we have a mind that is peaceful, and then we come back to reflect on these things that we usually would like or dislike, that these things will have to be parted from us. And when we parted from it, then we will suffer. And so where is this us or me to be found in this thing? Where is it mine? And so we can contemplate in this sort of line of thinking or contemplation, all the things that I like will have to be parted. I'll have to be parted from. All the things I dislike, I'll have to be parted from. And so we can contemplate that the cup is already broken, or anything that we use around us, the material objects that we think are ours, we can contemplate that they're already broken. And contemplate that the body that we see, it's already as if dead. Or we can see people that are older already, maybe 80, 90 years old, and we see their bodies, and we see the type of their state of mind. It's like they don't want to go about anywhere, move about anymore, or some of them don't even want to be in the world anymore. And so we contemplate and bring that back to us, that we will also get sick and die just like this. And so before it happens to us, we need to contemplate these things first, and to understand it, to understand the reality of it. But if we ourselves do get sick and have a lot of pain, then we really, really need to contemplate that a lot. And so Dhamma practitioners, when they have this good health, they may be heedless and not contemplate. But Venerable Ajahn Chah said that for someone who does get sick and has a lot of pain, then they would say, now this is the real thing. You've got to contemplate it. You shouldn't be heedless then or careless. And so when everything is going well and we're relaxed and at ease, then people may tend to forget themselves and forget about the practice. So when we have vedana, we have to be able to practice with feelings or painful feelings. And it's the same for monks or lay people. They'll all have to receive this vedana or painful pain in the future. And the pain won't be different for them at all. And so this means that we should be heedful and we should be determined to practice, put effort into our practice.
This next question is from Rasana, UK. Dear Longpa, Vandana and Namaskar, I would like to understand how to practice Hari Otapa in our day-to-day life. I read that this was one of the most important teachings that Ajahn Mun gave to Ajahn Chah. Thank you.
Hari and Otapa, this shame of doing wrong and the fear of the consequences of wrongdoing. These two qualities are what protects the world. It protects ourselves, it protects us. If there isn't these qualities of Hari and Otapa, then there are problems arising in the world. People will try to harm each other, and they'll harm each other whether a little or a lot, or between countries, there's wanting to harm or even trade. And so if there isn't goodness and virtue, these virtues in the world, then there'll be a lot of chaos and problems. And so if the world and people have these qualities of Hari and Otapa, then the world will be peaceful and at ease. So Hari, this wise shame of doing wrong, Otapa, the fear of the consequences of wrongdoing. So this means if we have these, then we won't do the unskillful or bad actions in terms of the body, speech, and mind. We will have thoughts coming up that, oh, it's not appropriate to do things like this, to have these unskillful actions, and we'll be thinking about this a lot. And so one who has these qualities, then they'll be able to protect themselves from these unskillful actions and qualities. Because when people harm others' lives or kill, then it's coming from this aversion. And so we need to contemplate in terms of the drawbacks of not having Hari and Otapa, the dangers of it. And so we see what types of dangers will come to us if we don't keep these or have these qualities. And if someone does do unskillful and bad actions because of not having Hari and Otapa, then we can think and contemplate on the karma that one will have to receive. So in our daily life, we do have like laws. For instance, if people are speeding when they're driving, then you have laws that they'll lose points, demerit points. They'll have to be fined. And then this makes people accept and then to live within the law. But if people have this sense of hiryotapa, then they may not need to have these laws of fines or demerits. But we understand that laws are there to keep people safe. And so the government needs to have demerits or fines so it makes people do it. And we can see that when the laws are strong in a country, then it leads to peace and happiness when people live within that law. And so this gives protection to the people there, and they're free from dangers. And this is like the Dhamma Vinaya protecting people. And so we have to develop those qualities of not having any ill will, not having any hate or grudges to others, and developing these feelings of being friends with others, having kindness and goodwill to each other. And so having this quality of hiri and otapa, then this makes the mind to have mindfulness and a sense of a caution of doing any wrong. And so in one day, you should try to contemplate a lot about these qualities, these two qualities. And this will make the mind more brighter, more purified. And these two virtues of hiri and otapa are what we call the devata dhammas, or the qualities of devas. And so if a person has these two qualities, then it's as if they are like a deva. So we need to train to build these qualities within us. And even though at times maybe we won't be able to do it, but we still have to train in it a lot, try to keep developing it. We develop it until we can have a mind of samadhi, and then we'll have this joy and fullness in goodness in the heart. And this is like our minds have this natural quality of sila with it. And so in the beginning, then we develop sila, and this progresses to, is a foundation for our samadhi, and this samadhi will lead to wisdom. And so it's like this, that we are developing merit first, then it changes to being skillfulness or kusala, and it's like it changes to be intelligence, and then there's a wisdom arising of knowing the truth coming up. So be intent to keep this sila and these qualities of hiri otapa, because if we have hiri otapa, then sila will arise.